Tim's News Explosion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Tim's News Explosion for another week on this Monday, the 11th of March, 2024. We are live on the Wilmsfront YouTube channel, the Wilmsfront Odyssey channel, and the Wilmsfront Rumble channel. It is 9 p.m. here in Melbourne, Victoria, where the Labor Day long weekend heat wave is coming to an end, which of course was used to pump out climate change and bushfire hysteria. We had the City of Melbourne cancel today's Moomba parade to add to the drama. They cited the safety of the Moomba parade participants and the costumes that they had to wear. Why not just give out some free water and hire more of those water sprinkler fans? And the CFA, they eventually succeeded in getting the organizers of the Pitch and Music Festival near Ararat. On Friday, they told ticket holders to go home, despite organizers saying that the festival would go on. It sounds like the authorities are testing the grounds for climate lockdowns, despite the fact that it has been way hotter here in Victoria in my lifetime. But because we're in March, technically autumn, they say this is unprecedented. It hasn't happened for 70 years. And they eventually succeeded, the authorities, in getting the last day of the music festival cancelled. But the real danger at music festivals is, of course, drug overdoses. And there was a 23-year-old man from Nidri who died after a suspected drug overdose. I mean, that's such a waste of life. I mean, you're never going to stop these young people taking drugs at music festivals. I mean, going to a music festival, it's like the worst thing that I could ever think of. And so on the other hand, maybe taking drugs is the only way to enjoy it. Not that I'm advocating for it. Now, there was no bushfire that eventuated near Ararat. There was a bushfire there a couple of weeks ago on another hot day. They made it sound like the festival goers were at risk of some sort of a Hamas parachute attack. Yeah, but instead of Hamas terrorists coming down on parachutes, it was going to be a huge firebomb. And so they're just testing the ground, it seems, so in the future, they're going to have mass cancellations of public events when it is deemed too hot. And then they're going to be introducing restrictions of where you can and can't go when there's a heat wave. After the 2009 Black Saturday bushfires in Victoria, the government passed the state of disaster powers, which allow them to seize properties, enter properties without a warrant. That's what, remember, Dan Andrews used during the to enforce the COVID lockdowns. This is despite the fact modern technology has the means to allow us to cool down with air conditioning, but in the name of fighting the heat, i.e. energy policy means that air conditioning is unaffordable for many Australians, and also more people turning on their air conditioners puts pressure on the grid. Though we have got all around Melbourne, Port Phillip Bay and Western Port Bay, it's free for people to go to the beach and go in the cool water there. I mean, that's what Australians have done ever since the beginning of the Australian project. Hello to everyone in the chat. Vignal says, morning. I'm not sure where you are, but it's definitely evening here. And Picozimen here as well says, night. Please make yourself known in the chat and don't forget to smash that like button. Picozimen was there last night for my Wilmsfront discussion with New Zealander William McGimpsky to celebrate the death of fake news in New Zealand, although the news broke that there's going to be a Jacinta Ardern Hollywood movie and documentary based on a response to the Christchurch massacre. And which the New Zealand taxpayer is paying for. So if you want to see that, that is on the Wilmsfront channels, the previous video there. So it's my second night in a row. Now on to the rest of the local news. And there's been a lot of horrific crime lately. In not just in Victoria, but nationwide. And last Thursday, Victoria Police made a murder arrest in relation to the disappearance of 51-year-old Ballarat mother, Samantha Murphy. So Patrick Stevenson, 22 years old, son of former AFL footballer Oren Stevenson, was arrested with her murder. Samantha Murphy disappeared on a morning jog on February 4, and when she didn't turn up for brunch, that's when authorities were alerted. Now, Victoria Police say that it was a deliberate attack. That's what they're alleging, but they haven't released a motive, and they haven't found her body because she disappeared in Mount Clear bushland, where there's a lot of disused mines there. So, and he apparently he's not cooperating, Patrick Stevenson. So it seems that it seems an unlikely alleged murderer. Now, disgustingly, the magistrate initially suppressed his name when he was arraigned on the Thursday. His lawyer claimed he was at risk of self-harm, and because it was his first time in custody, and the magistrate agreed he was entitled to a fair trial, even though his name had been widely circulated. And of course, it's ridiculous in the digital age for these. Victoria is known as the suppression capital, and the mainstream media appealed the next day and it was lifted. Even Stevenson's lawyers agreed they wouldn't pursue the suppression order further. We should have a open justice system where everybody is entitled to attend court proceedings, as many as will fit in the room. Obviously, we have the Federal Court of Australia live streaming many court proceedings, including the Bruce Lehman defamation trial against Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson. And when it comes to selecting a jury, the jurors are instructed, they're told to filter things out. Now, it was a female magistrate who initially granted this suppression order, so it wasn't some white male magistrate protecting another white male. And some of you will have observed the feminists already focusing on the privileged white private schoolboy angle, the economic zone formerly known as Australia, put out this meme on social media. "Please let the killer be white. Please, killer be white," overheard the Age. "Australian journalists hearing that Sam Murphy's alleged killer is white so they can bury murders by Africans and gays from the front page." Now, the various feminist anti-domestic violence pages, they have their, what is it, Counting Dead Women Femicide. Never mind that there has been a males allegedly murdered. Obviously, the Sydney gay couple, Jesse Baird and Luke Davies, allegedly murdered by another gay man, Beau Lamar Condon. There was that Taekwondo master who allegedly strangled a seven-year-old boy who was his student and then killed both his parents. So two male victims there. But of course, the feminists always have an agenda. I, of course, have no agenda. I just report things as they are. I mean, of course, we all wish that the rainbow multicultural harmony society that has been thrust upon us worked, but it's not working. And there has been another horrific alleged murder. This is of this Indian mother in Melbourne's West, Point Cook. And you'll have to excuse my pronunciation here. So Shatiana Sweeta Madagana, she was found dead in a wheelie bin in a town outside of Geelong. Her husband, Ashok Raj Varika Papala, disappeared to India, dropped off their three-year-old son with Chatiana's mother. So he is the prime suspect at the moment. Indian authorities have said that they will take action to apprehend him if they are instructed to by Victoria Police. But it is worth mentioning that India has a domestic violence crisis, as does the neighboring countries, Bangladesh and Pakistan. You would have seen those Spanish tourists who were camping in India, and the wife was gang raped by a bunch of six Indian men. But they said you shouldn't judge the whole 1.4 billion population of India based on the actions of six. And obviously, acid attacks, they're common in India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. Did anyone also see that video of that white lady who was sunbaking on a beach in Bangladesh, and all of the Bangladeshi men are all staring at her because it's such an uncommon sight there? So it'd be interesting to see a racial breakdown or country of birth breakdown of domestic violence perpetrators, like we do for offenders per 100,000 via country of origin. I've showed that before. We do know that Sudanese, those born in Sudan, are massively overrepresented. And we had another man of African appearance charged with murder. This was over in Perth. So Colin Norton was 81, was stabbed to death. His wife Margaret, 75, was also stabbed, but survived, allegedly by Pasqua Zawadi Nayoshi, 19, at their Greenwood home. He is apparently known to the couple's foster son. So as this Noticer.news article says, Mr. Norton is the second elderly Australian to be allegedly murdered by an African teenager in the past month following the stabbing death of Violene White, 70, in Redbank Cranes, Queensland, on February the 3rd. And don't forget that Melbourne doctor, Ash Gordon, was allegedly murdered when trying to chase after two teenage home invaders here in Melbourne, out in Doncaster. He was young, but another victim of the youth gang crisis, which of course mainly come in 50 Shades of Black. We also have had Victoria police forced to shoot dead a 26-year-old a woman after she was stabbing her 52-year-old mother, and police were left with no choice but to shoot the 26-year-old daughter. This was in Montmorency over in Melbourne's east, and the 52-year-old mother died. So just a all-round tragedy. What is happening to Australia? I mean, we're hearing almost nightly now, gruesome alleged murders and deaths. I mean, we are a nation that its population is increasing. We reached 27 million earlier this year. Naughty says, we certainly have a two-tiered justice system. Well, the police, you have to give them credit. They do apprehend these alleged murderers and offenders pretty quickly, but it's when they get before a court. Our judicial system is certainly failing us. If they're under 18, they basically get the most minor of sentence, and of course they're out on bail immediately. Because a lot of these alleged youth murders murders allegedly committed by youths, because they're under 18, they can't be named, they are out on bail. And obviously, the mass immigrants that we're getting are coming from, as I mentioned before, coming from countries who are already locally disproportionately represented in our local crime statistics based on country of origin. Now, up in Broome, a white man, a 45-year-old air conditioning install man, Matye Radlik, who actually sounds like an ethnic Slavic name. So he was charged with three counts of aggravated assault in Broome after I agree with the Daily Mail here. It was a disturbing video which showed that he had cable tied three Aboriginal children there was actually four of them who were swimming in the swimming pool. It was his parents' property. One of the Aboriginal children escaped. There was two left by the time that police arrived, because he was the one that actually called the police. One of the Aboriginal children escaped before the police arrived. I'm not going to play the footage because it's very distressing. So the children's mother, Rowena, she went on a current affair with Alistair, Ali Langton, and she's heard crying while asking Radlik to release her children. I mean, he now says that he regrets his actions, And apparently this was the sixth time that the property had been broken into, and pool invasions are quite common in Broome. Obviously, none of us live there, and so we don't know what it's like. It's another town in northwestern Australia. This is in Western Australia, not the Northern Territory, which had a youth crime crisis. So Alice Springs is obviously the most well-known epicenter. Did anyone see Spanion's video visiting Australia's most dangerous town, Alice Springs? That's already got over a million views on YouTube. It goes for an hour. You have to skip to 40 minutes until when it's after dark. Now, he is received relatively well by people in the town. He had two local escorts who were able to introduce him, a white guy and an Aboriginal guy. And he was already quite well known. Spanion, of course, is that rapper ex-criminal. Certainly if somebody else well known just decided to wander into one of the Aboriginal town camps in Alice Springs, they might get a different reaction there. Hello, Dawn. Great to see you. I didn't see you last night, but it's good to see you back. I haven't seen Paleoconservative Australian or Dawn, Lady of Shalott for a while. So I hope everything's well with them. I always like to know that my regulars are well. So obviously, as I mentioned, it's very disturbing, this video of the Aboriginal children cable tied. Now, as I mentioned, locals have said that it's common for their pools to be invaded and also their properties damaged. There was a crowdfunding that was set up to buy the Aboriginal children a pool, in which Matte Radlick's son, Luca, said was rewarding trespassing. He said that his family is not racist. It's about crime, not race. And so obviously this is raised community tensions. The local member there called for calm. And this is common as well for Aboriginal children to just be roaming the streets, often getting into trouble, stealing things. But I mean, in terms of swimming in a pool, that's at the lower end of antisocial behavior. It's not as if they were petrol sniffing, rammering. Dawn Browning says, Lady is working Monday evenings now, so I'm not sure about Palo. Hope all's well. Well, remember, if you missed the show, please make sure you still give a thumbs up and give a comment afterwards below, because it all helps with the algorithm fighting YouTube. I mean, YouTube in particular, I've done well to survive on YouTube for this long, certainly, that's for sure. Now, moving on to the sports report. There's a lot of sports news to cover. And obviously, the biggest sports news of the past week was Samantha Kerr, Australia's most well-known female soccer player, captain of the Australian Matildas and Chelsea FA Women's Super League striker. She faced court last Monday, charged with racially aggravated harassment of a police officer during a dispute over a taxi fare back in January 2023. So it's over a year ago. And so she allegedly had been out celebrating her hat-trick win against Liverpool earlier that day and got very drunk and vomited in the taxi. And so the taxi driver added the vomit surcharge, as it is known, to her fare for the cleanup. And that's when she kicked up a stink and the police were called. And when this broke, she hadn't told Australian football officials or the Chelsea Football Club that she was facing these charges. Now, the initial media reporting was that how could Australian women's soccer golden girl be charged with such a crime, because she is the most well-known a women's soccer player in the world. She was on the FIFA 23 EA Sports cover. She is the most highest paid female sports star. Obviously, Chelsea is an English club, which has much more well known men's team in the Premier League. And now the guessing game began because Sam Kerr is of Anglo-Indian ancestry. She has visible brown skin. She's the younger sister of former West Coast Eagle player Daniel Kerr. Pun intended there. They were called the West Coast Eagles back in the 2000s because of Daniel Kerr and Ben Cousins' drug use. So London is a city where the white majority is rapidly shrinking, stands at 53.8%, according to the UK Office of National Statistics. And of course, the Metropolitan Police, in the name of diversity and affirmative action, go out of their way to hire non-white police officers. It's doubtful she would be charged with racially aggravated harassment of an Indian police officer, which leaves either Black, Asian, or Arab police officers. And Sam Kerr, during 2020, took a knee for Black Lives Matter and was one of the soccer players who appeared in an anti-racism video. This was her contribution.
Racism has been around for far too long.
But then the news broke that the police officer she allegedly racially abused was white by calling him a stupid white bastard. Although her lawyers claim that she called him a stupid white police officer. And because the intersectional crowd, racially abusing a white person, engaging in anti-white racism, is what it should be called. It shouldn't be called reverse racism. They believe that that doesn't exist. That you can't be racist to a white person because white people are not oppressed or marginalized. I think the white South African farmers might disagree. What's happening to the white South African farmers? I mean, that's the logical. Or you'd say is one of the end results of anti-white racism. They are brutally tortured and murdered because of their skin color. Whites in South Africa have to live in high fence gated communities to protect them from the blacks on the street who hate them for being white, and many of them will assault, bash them. So anti-white racism, obviously I don't believe the UK has so many different hate speech laws. I don't believe that any racist word should be illegal unless they're an incitement to violence. The UK doesn't have a First Amendment like the United States has, so there are so many thought, speech, crimes. It might be the first time in the UK that a person has been charged, accused of anti-white racism. Of course, countless native white Brits have been charged with racism offences against non-whites. We have, of course, Sam Malaya, a husband of Laura Taylor, serving 2 years in prison for pro-white stickers that were deemed racist because he holds anti-Semitic views, even though these stickers themselves were not racist. But again, I'm digressing here. And now, jumping to Sam Kerr's defence, was the New South Wales Premier Chris Minns and WA Premier Roger Cook, both Labor, who said that if somebody called them a stupid white bastard, they would not consider it racism. Anthony Albanese said of Kerr when she was the flag bearer for King Charles III coronation, "My contact with her was exemplary. She did Australia proud at the time, and I think that my contact her has been nothing but delightful." And this is all taken from my article on theunshackled.net. So I highly doubt that Sam Kerr is actually an anti-white racist. She's engaged to a white woman, Christy Muse, who is a US soccer player. Though I wonder how Christy feels given, well, about that slur. If she'd abused, racially abused a member of another race, she'd be labeled a racist no matter what. Her career would likely to be over. But we're also not talking about the fact that she got drunk and vomited in a cab, and it never hit the news until a year later. If a male sports star did that, I mean, the sports journalists, who of course are all busybodies and think they're holier than thou, woke-tard pearl clutchers would be saying, "Oh, they've disgraced themselves. They should be punished for that. Does the team have a drinking culture? What a poor role model." But I also said that Kerr, given that she allegedly blurted out this anti-white slur when she was drunk, might deep down harbour some anti-white sentiment. And now, Lydia Thorpe, she posted on X that all statues of Captain James Cook should be replaced with Sam Kerr, presumably because she approved of Kerr's alleged anti-white slur. She said, "Replace all statues of Captain Cook with statues of Sam Kerr, one true captain." And of course, Lydia Thorpe was caught on camera engaging in anti-white racism, calling a white man a white little cunt, along with claims he had a small penis and that he was marked. Lydia Thorpe was not charged with racial vilification or offensive behaviour. But last year, Stephanos Arakulos, Australian Meditations, was charged with using a carriage service to offend Lydia Thorpe because of a sign in the background of a video put out by the Warriors of the Convict Resistance on Australia Day, which read, "Lydia Thorpe, Abbo Whore." Sam Kerr's lawyers will attempt to get the charges thrown out next month, arguing abusive process by the Met Police. But if not, Kerr will face a 4-day criminal trial in February 2025. Justice is slow in the UK. Now, former Socceroo Craig Foster, who's part of the, what is it, Diversity Multicultural Council, anti-racist campaigner. He initially criticised Sam Kerr, but then issued an apology because he agreed that white people can't be the victims of racism. So this is what he said. Judging from coverage, comments, and conversations we're all having every day, there were major gaps in knowledge about how to deal with situations that described that descriptor white is used in a derogatory way. If you had been open enough to read, listen, and research and change your understanding, I thank you. As any experts and leading anti-racism pointed out, interpersonal comments can be offensive, abusive, or inappropriate. However, racism generally be perpetrated against a marginalized person or group, which anti-racism frameworks are specifically designed to protect. And he quotes the Diversity Council of Australia's definition, which I won't bore you with. And so he says that does this equate to a double standard when the same term or phrase is used against marginalized groups? The question is answered no, because the power differential and therefore impact are vastly and fundamentally different. Those of us who are from a minority background can't possibly know how it feels to be told we don't belong, don't speak the language, don't look right, and told back to where you came from, or to have faced intergenerational racism. So Craig Foster has drank the intersectional anti-white Kool-Aid there. So at least they're being honest, the anti-whites, that anti-racism vilification laws were never intended to protect whites. Dawn Browning says, Sam Malaya, James Oldchurch, James Costello, Christopher Kearney all got a big 2+ year sentences. Others are getting lesser. These are all in the UK, aren't they? Aren't they, Dawn? And I saw that Naughty has said, they're fantastic. Don't interrupt your mnemonic counters when they crap the bed, or when they're basically exposing who they are. P. Gosman says, what, like Australians are now being told go back to England? Never mind the fact I'm not English and don't have any friends or family over there. I remember when Alex Jones told Piers Morgan, go back to where you came from if you don't like our guns here. And Piers Morgan, his show was cancelled by CNN, and he did go back to the UK and learnt to try and not be an expert in something that he's not. But I'm going to digress there. But yeah, white people can be told to go back to where they came from, but apparently that's not racist. But people of color can be deemed racist against other people of color, and so the NRL had their big launch in Las Vegas because apparently they want to expand into the United States. What delusional there. I mean, the chairman of the NRL, Peter Vallandis, he's a delusional, angry prick, basically. And so he thought that this was, you know, the greatest thing ever, and the NRL media just ate it up. Sydney Roosters player, Spencer Lenu, he's of Samoan descent. Even though he was born in New Zealand, he plays for Samoa. He has been suspended for 8 matches for calling a 21-year-old Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander player Ezra Mam a monkey. He's got 8 weeks for that. And he's admitted that he called him a monkey, but didn't mean it in a racist way. Now, obviously, Samoans and Aboriginals are different races, but and again, this just proves that evolution is racist, since it's being used as a slur to say. I mean, the way that it's deemed to have a racial connotation is you're claiming that somebody doesn't look properly evolved from monkeys. Now you remember that Adam Goods called that 14-year-old Collingwood supporter the face of Australian racism because she called him an ape, and she was interrogated by police, and she said she called him an ape. because he was hairy. And so this is just absolutely ridiculous. But the AFL, not to be outdone, during the practice match between St Kilda and North Melbourne, St Kilda player Jimmy Webster knocked out, concussed, the North Melbourne captain Ty Simpkin. It's his third concussion in a year, and the AFL administrators are trying to crack down on knocks to the head, because they're facing a class action from those ex-players who've suffered from concussion. Now, he got Jimmy Webster at the tribunal 7 weeks. So he almost decapitated Simpkin. Like, his head could have just basically been knocked off. It was one of the worst bumps that I've seen in a while. He's an absolute grub. Now, Alistair Clarkson, a four-time premiership player coach with Hawthorn, now with North Melbourne. He is well known for being a hothead, but as I just said, he's a successful hothead. And because his captain was concussed, knocked out, he gave Jimmy Webster a spray. But because he used the slur cocksucker, that was deemed to be a homophobic slur. Because I guess he's by calling Jimmy Webster a cocksucker in a derogatory way, it's a negative thing for a man to like to suck other men's cocks. So Alistair Clarkson, he got a 2-week suspension, which is wholly suspended for 2 years. So he would have to serve the 2-week suspension if he reoffended, and received a $20,000 fine, and will be required to attend appropriate Pride in Sport training as approved by the AFL. So go to re-education camp. So this is a North Melbourne statement. Clarkson said, "At the outset, I want to reiterate my initial public apology and acknowledge that my exchange with St Kilda players was unnecessary and the language I used was inappropriate. I have sincerely apologised to Coach Ross Lyon, Jimmy Webster and Dougal Howard for the manner in which I reacted. This has been a significant, reflective moment for me. My language not used with any intent to vilify or marginalise. However, through this incident, I have begun to understand the impact of the use of casual language. I'm fully committed to educating myself in this regard. In terms of my reaction to incident involving Jai Simpkin, I've been doing some work to understand why I respond the manner I do, but also develop strategies I can implement in these moments." Even though cocksucker has been a slur for many years, and many people have used it, have not used it in the way that it's now deemed, have not used it, have just used it as an insult, just like people use, "Oh, that's so gay," or "You're gay," as an insult. And people who, well, I saw on Twitter a lot of self-confessed male cocksuckers. I say that they weren't offended. I mean, if Clarkson had called them a cocksucking faggot, like Alec Baldwin did to a Hollywood reporter many years back, then it may be a different story. Now, Alistair Clarkson wasn't the only sports person to get in trouble for alleged homophobia. The A-League Soccer, going back to soccer, had their Pride round. And there's the Pride game between Adelaide United and Melbourne Victory. But according to this Seven News reporter, it's been overshadowed by one of their Muslim African teenage stars, Moussa Touré, posting on his Instagram that as a Muslim, he didn't support the Pride round.
Adelaide United is tonight in damage control after one of its brightest young stars publicly condemned Pride round. Moussa Touré took to social media saying he and his Muslim teammates don't support the event that promotes diversity and inclusivity.
Going to great lengths to avoid our cameras, Moussa Touré leaves the training track this morning in his car. While teammates walk from the ground, the 18-year-old rising star at the centre of a Pride round storm after an Instagram post condemning the annual event that promotes inclusivity in sport. "I'm a Muslim before anything," he wrote. "I do not support the Pride round. The Muslims in my team all disagree about the Pride round," adding, "We have no problem with LGBTQ people. It's their life." His controversial comments appearing to catch the coach off guard.
"I don't have Instagram, so I don't know what you're talking about."
Does he regret that comment?
"I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about."
Touré quickly deleted the post last night at the request of club officials, but equality advocates are seeing red.
"I don't think it's helpful when you see athletes in any sport making those sorts of comments. It does discourage LGBTI people from being involved in sport."
Adelaide United telling Seven News it will continue educating players and staff about the significance of respecting diversity and promoting inclusivity. Adelaide United has been at the forefront of the conversation of gender and sexual diversity in sport. Two of its players recently making history. In 2021, Josh Cavallo became the first openly gay player in top flight soccer.
"I'm Josh Cavallo, I'm a footballer, and I'm proud to be gay."
And just last week, goalkeeper Grace Wilson became the first player in A-League history to come out as non-binary. Touré won't play in Saturday's Pride round clash against Melbourne as he recovers from an injury. Hayden Nelson, 7 News.
And Josh Cavallo didn't play in the Pride match either because he had another injury. He seems to be injury prone. I mean, if he didn't come out as gay, nobody would know who he is because he's just on the sideline constantly. And that non-binary player, I mean, she's still playing in the female women's team. She's clearly playing in it because she's a biological woman, despite identifying in non-binary. She's not having a go at the men's. And that brings me to International Women's Day, which, the TERFs, the Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminists, are attempting to reclaim. They believe that, I don't know why. I mean, some of them are communists and socialists. It did have its roots, International Women's Day, in the Russian Revolution, but in the TERF TRA wars, it's become a battleground. The trans rights activists, they, of course, believe that trans women are women. Now, of course, over in the UK, the most famous TERF is J.K. Rowling. She has 14 million Twitter X followers. She of course is world famous for the Harry Potter book series, and so she has amassed a fortune there where she is able to fund all sorts of TERF causes. And she's also able to, she's got the platform to take on, to call out the absurdity of male criminals who suddenly identify as female being called she and being put in women's prisons. One of her most recited mantras is that a woman should not be able to should not have to be compelled to say that a woman raped her with her penis. Dawn Browning says, J.K. then Posey bimbification Parker. Well, I've previously said that I'm not really a fan of Kelly J. Keen, Posey Parker anymore. But J.K. Rowling, well, she's a legend just for writing the Harry Potter books, and all the cancellation attempts haven't worked on her. But transgender newsreader India Willoughby, no relation to former This Morning presenter Holly Willoughby, though India Willoughby did appear on This Morning many years back with Kelly J. Keen in a trans debate. So India Willoughby spoke to Kaylin Robertson of the Byline TV. You may remember Kaylin Robertson. He and his boyfriend, George Llewellyn John, used to work for Rebel News and worked with Tommy Robinson, then sensationally quit, accusing Rebel of inappropriate fundraising. Though Kaylin and George, they've proven themselves to be grifters and untrustworthy. I mean, the fact that he has gone to working with a leftist rag, the Byline Times, which failed to ruin Dan Wharton, formerly of GB News's career, with sexual misconduct allegations. He is planning to sue. He's been cleared by the police. He got fired by GB News over the Lawrence Fox. He wouldn't shag that feminist Ava Marie. So he was suspended for 5 months. He's formally been sacked now, but I digress. So Kaylin Robertson invited India Willoughby for an interview, and she, India Willoughby, I can't help but, you know, still be polite when it comes to these sorts of things. But it's worth pointing out that pronouns, and again, pronouns shouldn't be enforced, because I know that Kelly J. Keen say, if you call somebody like India Willoughby a she, you're lying, you're taking part in a lie. But pronouns do not change biology either. India Willoughby is still a biological male, so calling India Willoughby she doesn't change India Willoughby's biology. But this is what India Willoughby told Kaylin at the Byline Times.
J.K. Rowling's definitely committed a crime. I'm legally a woman. She knows I'm a woman, and she calls me a man. It's a protected characteristic, and that is a breach of both the Equalities Act and the Gender Recognition Act. She's tweeted that out to 14 million followers. If you check out the accounts that have been responding to me on the back of that, her trigger, it's absolutely disgusting, putrid, some of the worst abuse I've ever seen on social media. And I know I'm at the centre of it, and I might be a little bit biased.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do about it? Well, I've been to the police, and I've reported it as an issue. I contacted Northumbria Constabulary yesterday.
So you reported J.K. Rowling
to the police? I have reported J.K. Rowling to the police for what she said, which I don't know that if that's going to be treated as a hate crime, malicious communications, but it's a cut and dried offence as far as I'm concerned. And at the end of the day, it is a hate crime. Trans gender identity is a protected characteristic, just as race is, just as sexuality is. And the equivalent of what J.K. Rowling said, calling a trans person a man, deliberately knowing that that person is a woman, and I am a woman, regardless of what J.K. Rowling says. I've been through everything that's required of me. My birth certificate says female, my passport, all of my documents. I am legally recognized as a woman. And for J.K. Rowling to deliberately, and that is the key word, misgender me, knowing who I am, is grossly offensive. It is a hate crime, and it should be treated just as somebody calling a black person the N-word, or an Asian person the P-word. Or
and now when she said calling an Asian person the P-word. I was sort of like, what's that? But they call Pakistanis in the UK Asian, which we just call them Indians or from the some continent. And the P-word is apparently Paki, which is short for Pakistani. And this is another ridiculous thing about that. Shortening names is considered a slur. So Paki is short for Pakistani. That's considered a slur. Abo is short for Aboriginal. Abo is considered a slur. Leb is short for Lebanese. That's considered a slur. Jap is short for Japanese. Jap's considered a slur. And then you also have Les, which is short for lesbian, but Les is considered offensive. Dawn Browning says he's mistruthing me. And why does India Willoughby, why are they so desperate for J.K. Rowling's validation? I mean, you claim, you know, you say that I, like, all my documents say I'm a woman, I am a woman. Like, it's why do you want to compel J.K. Rowling to call you she? And obviously, the changing of India Willoughby's documents doesn't change that, and India Willoughby passes very well as a woman. But obviously, when you're seeking medical treatment, like if your documents say that you're a woman, but they do tests on you and say, "Hang on, there's sort of issues here," and so obviously it's appropriate for medical records to reflect actual biology. Now, the police have said that they've recorded this as a non-hate crime, that it didn't reach the criminal threshold. And J.K. Rowling has got legal advice that she had a winnable case against Ella Willoughby for defamation, but that India's obsessive targeting of me over the past few years may meet the legal threshold of harassment. India Willoughby is demanding a re-investigation, an investigation appeal. I'm not sure how that works. India Willoughby said, "Shocking. I can't even reply under tweets anymore because JKR's dementors." Although that's something that India Willoughby is using J.K. Rowling's invention, the dementors, against her. It's just outrageous. "Jump in. It's hate and harassment. She absolutely knows that her words trigger. Police being useless. They don't want the headache of dealing with the Home Secretary, Daily Mail, etc., so are ducking it. I'm appealing their decision not to prosecute and will be asking for a review on Monday because there are certain things about the statement I'm not happy with." Now, Kalen, he decided to go for full abuse of J.K. Rowling. Because Kalen said, "We invited J.K. Rowling for an interview as well." J.K. Rowling said, "The truth is I was too intimidated to face Britain's answer to Bob Woodward," sarcastically. Kalen said, "Why are you such a cunt, putrid cunt?" Kalen decided to capitulate and said, "I apologize unreservedly." Probably knew that he was never going to no one's ever been able to take down J.K. Rowling, and said, "I'm completely sorry for my behavior towards J.K. Rowling last night and apologize to her for the uncommutable, excusable language I use. It won't happen again." And J.K. Rowling said she believed his apology was sincere and urged her followers not to pile in on him, and said she hadn't illegally threatened him. But after Kalen's history, I certainly wouldn't be so merciful and forgiving of him. And Katie Hopkins, who's an excellent judge of character, posted a private WhatsApp she had with Kalen back in the past, and how Kalen was trying to get a BBC thing cut. He did come dine with me when they filmed him while he was drunk. And so he was going to, he said, "I think if I tell them I'll kill myself, they'll pull it because of ethical issues." So, yes, that's just an example of his manipulative tactics there. So he deserves no mercy from anybody there. Now, although J.K. Rowling, it doesn't look like she'll be prosecuted for the moment, she has said she's prepared to go to jail over her beliefs. So when Sir Keir Starmer and Labour are elected at the end of the year, one of their MPs, Angela Eagle, unveiled their trans policy, which they want to implement pretty quickly after they get elected.
So this year, whether the Prime Minister likes it or not, there'll be a general election, and Labour will offer the country to pick up legislating to protect the LGBT community with a comprehensive trans-inclusive ban on conversion therapy. I would have liked to get it done sooner. It will happen. We just have to make progress, and it's very sad that, as Honourable Friend said, it's taken longer than the Brexit negotiations, which makes you stop and think about what's been going on. We'll also strengthen the law so anti-LGBT plus hate crimes are treated as aggravated offences, which is and there'll be a much needed modernising of gender recognition processes, which are humiliating and overlong.
Yes, so that is coming to Britain in, you would say, 2025. Now, I saw that Suella Braverman reposted this and said vote Conservative, but all the replies were no, we're not doing that again. Your government has been completely useless on everything. And a Labour Sir Keir Starmer government would have an accelerationist effect on the British population. Now, obviously, accelerationism is deemed an extremist ideology. That's only if it involves violence. But obviously, Labour are not going to be good for freedom and prosperity in the UK. Maybe things need to be a lot worse in the UK for the people to truly wake up, like they have in Ireland. Despite all the major political parties in Ireland are supporting the referendum to delete the protections for mothers and families from their constitution. So subsection 41.1.1 says and still says the state recognizes the family as the natural primary and fundamental unit group of society and as a moral institution possessing inalienable and imprescriptible rights and antecedent and superior to all positive law. And 41.3.1 says the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage on which the family is founded and protected against attack. And also the care one in particular, the state recognizes that by her life within the home, a woman gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. The state shall therefore endeavour to ensure mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. I'm glad that a Western country still has that in its constitution. So the amendments were that the state would recognise the family, whether founded on marriage or other durable relationships, or the state recognised provision of care by members of the family to one another of the reasons that bonds exist amongst them. So the task search, Leo Vadiskar, said that it would get rid of outdated language in the constitution, but the Irish population overwhelmingly rejected it. So for the family constitutional amendment, 67% no. For the care bill, it is 73% no. So for deleting mother, no, I got an even higher. So the Irish are fully awoke now, it seems, after the government invited and invited the third world into their country now. I mean, they thought it would be easy, all the major parties in the UK. There's not really a left and right in the in Ireland. It's more just basically loyalist and nationalist Republican. That's basically what it is, basically left globalist. They thought that after they got same-sex marriage and abortion legalized, that they could do anything they wanted. Not anymore. But yes, the UK, certainly, the resistance is much more, well, the fight back is much less advanced. And that is because, well, there's so much controlled opposition in the UK who are telling the members of the white working class what they want to hear, but not actually delivering. And now it's not just the government that is pushing the trans agenda. It is the UK mainstream media. So one of their youth soap operas, Hollyoaks on Channel 4, which is owned by the government, but has commercial revenue, aired a storyline about a girl who wanted to be a boy and was being groomed by a older trans woman.
It'll be okay. Just let's take it one step at a time.
I don't know what the first step is. I'm a boy, but my body's all wrong, and how am I supposed to tell my parents?
I'll help you in whatever way I can. But you need to know that your life is in your hands. So stop bunking off school. And then, and only then, you can start thinking about how and when you can tell your mum. Rose, you can't move on with your life until you've told the people you love who you truly are. That is, if you're sure.
I'm so sure.
Well, then once you've taken the first step, you can start actually being who you truly are. It's the best feeling in the world.
Paul Joseph Watson, he did a video on his Modernity channel about Hollyoaks, how it's been used by the government to push propaganda on the youth. There was a storyline in 2019 about one of the characters getting sucked into far-right extremism ideology online. And also during COVID, they had one of the characters fall down the anti-vax conspiracy. So again, this is the Mark Dice talks about this from a US perspective. The Hollywood government complex. Now, David Clues from Unity News Network, he is asking people to complain to Ofcom and Channel 4, though Ofcom, it seems, to only accept complaints about right-wing commentary rather than degenerate filth being pushed on the youth. And David Clues has been on, and Unity News have been on a bit of quite the run lately. So it was Unity News Network that exposed how in back in 2016, the BBC put together a documentary about the Batterin brothers who were acquitted on charges of sexual assault against minors, and the BBC Newsnight, they put forward the slant that they put forward is that they were being targeted because they were migrants, but they were later convicted, these brothers, of sexual assault. And now this is hitting the fact that the BBC were an apologist for were doing a sympathy back in 2016 of this Newcastle grooming gang. And now it's been reported by GB News and other right-wing media. As David Clue said, did these journalists bother to speak with the alleged victims? So yes, again, now David Clues, of course, is wanting to create a documentary, expose the BBC, because if you want a TV in the UK, you're forced to pay a license fee, otherwise the BBC prosecutes you. And now, Hollyoaks pushing transgenderism on children, they would do good to release the WPATH files, which were released by Michael Schellenberger on his Environmental Progress website. And so it is leaked from, this is the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, and the files detail that members of this professional association demonstrate a lack of consideration for long-term patient outcomes, despite being aware of the debilitating and potentially fatal side effects of cross-sex hormones and other treatments. And here in Victoria, they are performing top surgery on teenage girls who are under 18. So this was reported by Kiralee Smith's Binary. So the mother of a 15-year-old girl has posted to group chat that their daughter will be getting a double mastectomy in Victoria. Posted, happy today, just been informed there's a surgeon that our gender clinic recommended here in Melbourne. This is at the Royal Children's Hospital, that will do chop surgery on my 15-year-old son. This will be a massive breakthrough for his mental health. So now be able to wear a T-shirt like his friends and not constantly get asked why you wear hoodies in the summer. And he'll be able to go swimming. And another member said, my 12-year-old is wanting this already. Another group member said, it's always been known there have been no surgeons who will operate on people under 18 in Victoria. Talk about it all the time in this group. It's strange given Victoria has been ahead of so many other areas. So the news you found a surgeon in Victoria is willing to operate on someone under 18 is huge news. This is why I asked whether you could share the surgeon's name for those of us who are in the process of looking interstate. Moira Deeming, of course, independent Liberal MP, suing John Pesciuto for defamation over his successful attempt to expel her from the Liberal Party room because of her attendance at the Let Women Speak rally where Thomas Sewell and the NSN showed up. So the health minister, Marianne Thomas, told Moira Deeming that Royal Children's Hospital does not provide or refer children to surgical treatment. I mean, for top surgery for girls, it should at least be 18. Same for bottom surgery for boys, which is, it's dangerous for adults. And there it has recently been reported that a 21-year-old biological male died because of complications from bottom surgery, inverting his penis, a vagina, lastly, into a vagina. So died at the age of 23, and this is the review that he left on the surgeries website. It reads, I wish I never listened to the medical and psychiatric community when they told me it was possible to change my sex. What a lie. Very dangerous and ethical. Sex reassignment surgery is hit and miss, this type of surgery, but they don't even tell you. They never do. And maybe if I didn't have autism, maybe if my brain wasn't so defective, I would have caught on before it was too late. But there was a I wish there was a cure for autism, but that's unlikely. It's endless suffering on top of even more suffering. I also wish voluntary euthanasia was legal. My death, likely painful, has proven that ethics are not universal and are otherwise non-existent. No one is truly there for me, so there is no need to pretend. I have a gaping hole in my genital area with my colon spilling out, disgusting, and a ring of scar tissue blocking most of the entrance. If the colon can't discharge, it leaves me with severe blockage, which could turn and is likely expected into blood clots followed by death. I've already reattached the stage of blockage. What hurts me the most is loneliness and the inability to find a partner. I can't have a normal sex life. I'm a loser and probably deserve this deception. This is what I get for messing with nature. Mankind is destructive and I self-destructed. I just want friendship and love. I wanted life to be easier. I wanted to be a woman since I was 15. I wish I had the knowledge that I have today. I was a confused kid with no identity. I wish I could have done things differently, but it's too late now. I really screwed up. It says Dr. Thomas Satterwhite and Maurice Garcia, both in California, who are emergency surgeons, basically killed me. With accessory to my death is Dr. Miroslav Dojevec, Dr. Ranveer Porahit, and Dr. Rachel Bluebond Langer, and Dr. Jess Ting, who all refused to help me despite having letters by one psychologist and two clinical social workers recommending reversal surgery, my gene transitioning. My last wish is for the state of California. And the last bit is cut off there. Such so horrific there. And a lot of trans women now, biological males, are actually not going through this bottom surgery now because of complications like this. Some are opting for what are known as orchiectomies, cutting the testicles off, because they it means you that males produce less testosterone, so they don't have to take a higher dose of estrogen. But even that can lead to complications, constant bruising, which leads to constant pelvic pain, swollen blistering as well. So all trans surgery is significantly risky. Naughty Design says the people who did this must be held accountable. Yeah, absolutely horrific and sad that story. Now we will go back to the UK. So it was the spring budget by the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt, or he is well known, also known as by the Freudian slip, Jeremy Cunt. So the centerpiece of his budget was $6 billion for the NHS, so AI to improve waiting lists, and also $1 million for a Muslim war memorial to honor Muslims who fought for the British Empire in World War One and Two, which was lobbied by Sir Sajid Javid, the ex Chancellor and Health Secretary, who was knighted simply for being an MP and a minister, is retiring at the next election, helped orchestrate the coup against Boris Johnson to get his mate Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister.
Madam Deputy Speaker, as we mourn the tragic loss of life in Israel and Gaza, the Prime Minister reminded us last week of the need to fight extremism and heal divisions. So I start today by remembering the Muslims who died in two world wars in the service of freedom and democracy. We need a memorial to honour them. So following representations from the Right Honourable Member for Bromsgrove and others, I've decided to allocate £1 million towards the cost of building one. Whatever your faith or colour or class, this country will never forget the sacrifices made for our future.
Yeah. And also, Michael Gove, he is announcing a new anti-Muslim hatred Islamophobia advisor, and also coming up with a new definition of extremism. Michael Gove is Jeremy Cunt Hunt is the worst minister in the so-called conservative government, but Michael Gove is probably the second. It's also worth it. No, I'm not giving you money, GB News. You can get fucked for firing Mark Stein, Lawrence Fox, Dan Wharton, and I'm probably forgetting somebody as well. Oh, yeah, also Calvin Robertson as well. So Michael Gove is announcing a new approach to tackling extremism with a new definition of extremism. Tommy Robinson was arrested in London because he's not allowed to go without the blessing of the Met police. He was there for his daughter's birthday and to attend the Crystal Palace versus Luton Premier League game. It's outrageous that he can simply be banned from his own capital city simply for being him. He's not on bail for anything. So he is now in custody. This is a video of his arrest.
I'll ring you. Just
swing about.
Oh, go on. Right. Say something. Tell I haven't caused any problems. You can see that, yeah? I've got 12 kids. It's their birthday today.
Let him go to the bus and say goodbye to the kids. If you're going to take him.
Say that again, sorry?
Well, the bus is right there. Let him say goodbye.
He needs to stay by here.
I believe that he is now appearing before the courts as we speak. So there are probably more developments as we are going to air. Tommy Robinson, he does have a new interview show on Rumble called Silenced. He has interviewed Sargon Avocard, also Katie Hopkins, and of course his buddy Ezra Levant. And also the fired GB News hosts, they are creating their own content. Lawrence Fox has got a new show with Calvin Robertson, Father and Fox. And Dan Wharton is creating his own independent media outlet over on Substack, the platform that the Unshackled has recently joined. So it is called Dan Wharton Outspoken. So that's the latest from the UK. Let's go over to the United States, where Joe Biden delivered the State of the Union. Clearly, he was given some sort of cocktail of drugs, so maybe a new Pfizer formula to get through the State of the Union, though he did slur his words. It was delayed by 20 minutes because of pro-Palestinian rallies. And, of course, he mentioned that the January 6th put a dagger through the heart of democracy. Now, before he reached the podium, Marjorie Taylor Greene approached him with a badge of Laken Riley, who was that girl who was at the 22-year-old girl at the University of Georgia who was murdered by an illegal immigrant, Jose Antonio Ibra from Venezuela. He was arrested for prior multiple offences in New York, but was released after a short time. So Marjorie Taylor Greene held out a Laken Riley badge to Joe Biden when he approached the podium, which he accepted.
The
I don't know how to say the name.
Lake and Riley. Say your name, Mr. President.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. President.
And now, when he got to the podium, and Marjorie Taylor Greene prompted him to say Lincoln Riley's name, it came out differently.
It's not about him. It's not about me. I'd be a winner, not really. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand. But look, if we change the dynamic at the border, people pay these smugglers $8,000 to get across the border because they know if they get by, if they get by and let into the country, it's 6 to 8 years before they have a hearing. And it's worth taking the chance of the $8,000. But if it's only 6 weeks, the idea is it's highly unlikely that people will pay that money and come all that way knowing that they'll be able to be kicked out quickly.
And now Nancy Pelosi on CNN later said that Biden shouldn't have said that Lincoln Riley is what Biden called her, shouldn't have called Jose Antonio Ebrard an illegal, should have called him undocumented. And now Biden was also heckled by a father who lost his son in Afghanistan over the chaotic withdrawal, and he was arrested with a misdemeanor.
All Americans deserve the freedom to be safe, and America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then. Through my American Rescue Plan, which every American voted against, I might add, we made the largest investment in public safety ever. Last year, the murder rate saw the sharpest decrease in history. Violent crime fell to one of its lowest levels in more than 50 years. But we have more to do.
And now, a unique thing about the State of the Union address is that the Vice President and the Speaker of the House sit behind the President. So you can see their reactions for the entire time that the President is giving his address. And so Kamala Harris sitting to the left of you, and the Republican Speaker Mike Johnson to the right. Now, there were lots of streamers who were doing watch events for the State of the Union. I watched my friend Dr. Clown and his wife Karen over at Media Bear. They had a State of the Union Biden bingo card. And so they had things like Russia, Ukraine, LGBTQ, and whenever he said something, another thing would go on the bingo card. Now, Nick Fuentes, a host of America First, he also hosted his own stream watching the State of the Union, and he was able to predict in real time the only time when Mike Johnson got up to applaud Joe Biden during the State of the Union. Did anyone see this?
Girls, Johnson's going to stand up for the first time during the speech.
After enduring sexual violence, the deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust, and 250 hostages taken. Here in this chamber tonight are families whose loved ones are still being held by Hamas. I pledge to all the families that we will not rest until we bring every one of your loved ones home. We also,
the only time he got up in the whole speech, the only time he sat there for an hour, that was the only time he got up. I called it.
You will remember that Mike Johnson, when he was first elected Speaker, he said his first action as Speaker would be to approve a bill to give our beloved friend Israel extra aid. So it's not surprising there. Now, Donald Trump, he is now the presumptive nominee after Nikki Haley dropped out after Super Tuesday, even though she won Washington, D.C., the Swamp, and Vermont, Bernie Sanders' state. So I thought she was going to stay in until the end and spin the result. Now, she didn't endorse Donald Trump, said that he had to earn the vote. So now Donald Trump, his live reaction to the State of the Union, certainly raised some alarm bells among MAGA supporters, because he took issue first with Joe Biden, expressing sympathy for Israel. He's done nothing for Israel compared to what I've done. It's the only word he speaks, not truth. And when he said the vaccines that have been used to defeat COVID are now being used to fight cancer. So he said on this, the pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to beat cancer, turning setback into comeback. You're welcome, Joe. 9 month approval time versus 12 years that it would have taken you. And so it's raised a lot of discussion amongst the dissident right. Would a Trump presidency, would it have a more pro peace platform than Biden? Because we know that Trump is pro Israel, and Biden, he is because his base and the Muslims in Michigan whose votes need the swing, they are opposing his writing of blank checks to Israel. And so it could actually if the aid is significantly reduced to Israel, the military aid, and obviously the US is going to try and strong arm Israel to basically tone things down, but it seems that Trump and the Republicans would want to have a whole Middle East conflict and start a war with Iran. I'm libertarian. One of my heroes is Murray Rothbard. He said, always go with the anti-war candidate. Now, Trump has said that he'll solve the war in Ukraine with 24 hours. I'll do a deal between Russia and Ukraine. Now, obviously, Biden is for the forever war, which has the potential to be more deadly and escalate to a possible deadly world war. Is it Russia, Ukraine, or US, Iran, and all of Iran's allies in the Middle East? So something to consider going into it's the Trump versus Biden rematch. The Supreme Court knocked out the states, Colorado, Maine, and Illinois, that were trying to disqualify him from the ballot. It was 9-0. So even the liberal justices, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson Brown, ruled that only Congress could disqualify Trump from the ballot. Obviously, his criminal trials will take place during the presidential election. So they're still hoping to knock him out through getting him in one of those charges, though the RICO charges in Georgia's disintegrating. Fannie Willis, I mean, the fact that she's embezzled campaign funds, she's admitted that on the stand in the investigation of her, well, basically selecting her boyfriend Nathan Wade to be the prosecutor there. Now, I'm over time again, but we will go to Canada briefly. And the Conservative opposition leader there. Oh, actually, we'll stay in the United States for a moment. There is some good news from the United States, and that is the U.S. deep state's worst swamp monster, Victoria Nuland, who, of course, orchestrated the coup in Ukraine in 2014, has resigned. And this is what globalism does to you. So this was Victoria Nuland in 2005. She looked quite pretty there and on the right in 2024. Basically, and it reminds me of Roald Dahl's The Twits, another famous, excellent English author. Remember The Twits, people who think ugly thoughts will become ugly. And neoconservative warmongering is one of the most ugly ideologies that one can hold, and so she became ugly. Now going over to Canada's there's hope with its new conservative opposition leader, actual conservative, so that is Pierre Poilievre. He has pledged to repeal all of the hate speech laws, to unlock prosperity for Canada's natural resources, basically make Canada great again. And last week, he got through Freedom of Information bombshell evidence that Justin Trudeau's government colluded with the Chinese Communist Party to set up a number of biolabs in Canada.
We just received these documents that Trudeau has been covering up for years. Documents related to a massive security breach at the Trudeau government's most sensitive laboratory, where the most dangerous viruses and pathogens are studied and handled. We have learned that the Trudeau government's head of pathogens was collaborating with members of Beijing's People's Liberation Army, who are responsible for bioweapons and bioterrorism. We know now that a People's Liberation Army official was able to gain personal access, walk in the door, look at computers, and have access to all of our most important virological secrets. Let me, if you think any of this is hyperbole, read the report yourself.
So there is an actual opposition to Trudeau in Canada, and he is far ahead in the polls for the 2025 Canadian general election. So they may be finally, the Canadians might finally kick out Blackface Hitler. So Justin Trudeau, he is an abuser of human rights, a colluder with the communist regime. I mean, he's as bad as Dan Andrews. I mean, it's kind of a contest there. A lot of people believe that his actual father was not Pierre Trudeau, but the communist leader of Cuba, Fidel Castro. All right, that brings us to the end of Tim's News Explosion for another week. Now, remember, our Unshackled Productions archive is now at Substack, so I'll put the link into the chat, so you can take out a membership at the unshackled.substack.com/subscribe. I still have the Unshackled membership on our website, so theunshackled.net/membership. Make sure again to smash the like button, leave a comment, whether you're watching on YouTube, Odyssey, or Rumble. There'll be no Theorist with Andy Nolch probably anymore. I know I promised a show last week, but Andy didn't show up, and so the show didn't happen. As if you're hanging out for it, there was nothing. So Andy doesn't seem interested anymore, so there'll be no Tuesday night show anymore. But of course, there will be when I have a Wilmsfrank guest. So it'll be at 9 p.m. on Sundays, and of course, Tim's News Explosion 9 p.m. on Mondays. That is, of course, all Melbourne time. Though, would a lot of you like me to start? Because I started last night's show at 8:30 because William is from New Zealand. It was 10:30 p.m. Would you like me to go back to 8:30? Because I moved Tim's News Explosion back to 9 o'clock because they didn't want to clash with the battle of the Australia firsts with Gabriel Mare with Australia First and then, of course, Michael Nelson Mickle with White Australia First. But they don't seem to be streaming at the moment. So let me know if you want me to move back to 8:30 in the chat or the comments. There'll be a new report, Rouge and Wollstonecraft later on in the week. And, of course, we have articles still published on the unshackled.net, as is my weekly Tuesday segment on Reality Check Radio with Paul Brennan's breakfast program. So that'll be on tomorrow and available tomorrow. And, of course, Dewey DeBoer, my former Trad Tasman Talk co-host, has his own show, The Dialogue, on Reality Check Radio, which has been well-received and triggered the disinformation anti-conspiracy theorist because he had on Martin Selner, the Austrian identitarian, who's just been allowed back on Twitter X, which is awesome. So he is busy posting and vlogging as well. So good night, everybody. Make sure you stay safe, stay sane. Try to stay optimistic. There's a lot of bad news. And also stay cool. We've got the cool change tomorrow. So probably be back to autumn weather soon, and it'll probably be another freezing Melbourne winter before you know it. Good night, everybody.
Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.